Welcome to the ASCD podcast, supporting you on your journey as a life-changing educator. Here's your host for today's program.
Instructional leadership is a prized and critical quality in schools today. And yet, amid the pressures and varied responsibilities of their positions, it can be easy for school leaders to lose sight of their instructional role. My guest today thinks this is a central challenge in education and for school leaders themselves. I'm Anthony Rabora, the Chief Content Officer for ISD ASCD. I'm excited to be joined by the well-known school leadership expert, Baruti Kefele. He is the author of a new book titled, What is My Value Instructionally to the Teachers I Supervise? In it, he offers reflections and strategies to help leaders regain their instructional identity and impact. Principal Kefele, welcome. It's great to have you back on our program.
Great to be back. Thank you.
One thing your book makes very clear, and the examples you describe, is that school leaders often lose their focus on instructional leadership, often despite the best of intentions. Why do you think that is so common?
Yeah, you know, I look at that two ways. One, on what you said, they lose their focus. But there's another way of looking at it. Some of them never had a focus, particularly depending on how long they've been in leadership. So one may come in brand new, and they know in theory, philosophically, that they should be instructional leaders, but they're brand new and they're trying to figure out their building. They're trying to figure out their staff. They're trying to figure out themselves as a leader. Because if I've never led before, then I don't know myself as a leader. So I don't even know what it is yet because I haven't done it. So I know I want to do it. I know it matters, that it's significant, but my hands and my feet are in so many different things that I just can't do it. So a lot of times folks will come to me and say, Principal Kefele, it's an impossibility right now. I just don't know how to make the time. So now transitioning to that veteran, the answers are kind of comparable. You know, particularly in your urban or rural or just high need schools where folks are just being stretched in so many different directions, which is inclusive of being stretched into central office, various different meetings, that the true clinical supervision model, coaching, and observations, that pre and post observation, informal conference, conversation is my word though, it's just they find it difficult to make happen. Now in full disclosure, so did I, particularly in the first half of my principalship. I did it for 14 years. So those first few years, instructional leadership, yeah, I'll get in the classroom. But in terms of having the conversation, when we talk about being formative, versus being summative. You know, if I'm in there for an evaluation, then yes, I have a conversation on both ends, a pre and post. But that's summative. But in terms of growing a teacher methodically, that's where I struggled for a long time. And I had to figure that part out.
Yeah, you share a really powerful personal story in the book about your first year as a principal, and you saw your school's test scores go way down.
Yeah.
What effect did that have on you and how did it change your approach to leadership?
Yeah, you know, hearing of it first, it angered me. You know, just to hear my former mentor and now boss, Dr. Kenneth King, and now just longtime friend, say to me that he wasn't questioning how hard I work, because I told him I work hard. And he knew because he lived in the district, in the city. So he'd see my car there a lot, and including weekends. He said, I'm questioning how smart you work. And that stung. And it took me a long time to recover from that sting. But once I recovered from it, then I knew he was correct. And I had to figure out how to become that instructional leader. But it wasn't just becoming an instructional leader. It was creating a culture, leading the effort, I should say, in creating a culture that instructional leadership, the culture is now conducive to instructional leadership being a reality in our school. So that was key. What is the culture of the building, which frees me up, frees others up to be the instructional leaders that our staff and ultimately our students need us to be?
So what steps can leaders take to assess the quality and impact of their instructional leadership?
In terms of the instructional leadership itself or the ability to do it?
Well, what evidence should they be looking at to see how good am I at instructional leadership since this is such an important part of my job?
Yeah, that's those intended outcomes. That's that data. Mm-hmm. What does your data say? But let's just narrow it to a teacher. So since you started working with this teacher as a coach, this teacher that needed you, because coaching is equitable, just like when we talk about young people, every teacher doesn't need the same thing from you. There are probably teachers in the building that need minimal assistance or support from you as far as pedagogy. But then there are others on the opposite side of the spectrum that may need a wealth from you, right? So the question becomes, over a period of time, you know, we're looking at intervals between month one and month two or three. What does the data say relative to academic performance? What does the data say relative to attendance? What does the data say relative to discipline? And anything else, any other indicators in there that are relevant, but with the primary focus being on the academic achievement. But I mentioned the attendance because I can't achieve at optimal levels if I'm not in school. And if discipline's an issue, then I'm not even focused. So I want to look at those three broad categories primarily, but I want to put a particular focus on the academic performance when we talk about measuring those outcomes. So if I'm working with a teacher and I find it over the course of a month or two, whatever the yardstick may be, and I'm not seeing progress, then that tells me it's easy to point my finger at the teacher, but I prefer not to. It tells me a lot about the collegial relationship that I have with the teacher relative to the teacher's growth and development. Part of that is certainly going to be the eye test. You know, I'm going to look at the teacher and see, do I see the changes just based on what I observe in the classroom? But at the end of the day, that data has to say something to me that says we're making progress in whatever those skill areas are that young people are demonstrating deficiencies in.
So you're saying leaders really need to be intentional about looking at those various indicators as it reflects their instructional leadership.
Absolutely, because there is no real instructional leadership if data is not a part of the process. So as a coach, we're going to look at individual student data, but we're also going to look at aggregate data. What are we doing as a class? Or what is the class doing within this particular skill area? Whatever it is. But what is young Principal Kefele doing? And that's important. And when I'm doing the presentations on this topic, which I'll be doing one tonight, I put a lot of emphasis on young Principal Kefele, letting him be the example for the students who are in that classroom. What's happening with him? What kind of support does he have? Instructionally, what are we doing to ensure that whatever the methodology is in that classroom that is conducive to young Principal Kefele being able to process the information?
So you have a lot of detail about this in the book, but just to give a few examples, what are some things that, in your experience, really good instructional leaders do? What sets them apart?
Good instructional leaders pay a wealth of attention to the culture of the building. Because if I'm going to be an instructional leader, and as I say to a lot of the younger principals and the assistant principals, being an instructional leader does not translate into you got into multiple classrooms during the day. Just getting in the classrooms during the day in isolation makes you an observer. That's all it is. You observed instruction or you were visible for everybody to see. The instructional leadership happens before the visit and after the visit. That's that pre-observation conversation where, and I use the word conversation because it's got to be the two of us talking. So we're having a conversation on those areas that we mutually agree. We can grow you in those areas. We, though, not me. We. So then we go in and observe that. So we're not looking at this, meaning the macro. We're looking at that thing that we discussed, the micro. That's going to be the focus. So then as close to immediate as possible, now we'll have the follow-up conversation to discuss what was observed. And we'll go in depth with that. What was observed? What are my findings? What is my feedback? What are your findings? What is your feedback to your lesson? So the whole thing, the teacher is engaged in the conversation. So what sets that principal or assistant principal, or even instructional coach apart from the others of the same title is one, the ability to do it, but two, the ability to do it at a high level where there's great quality in the conversations, in the observation, in the follow-up feedback conversation.
Something interesting you write is that you say you can gauge the quality of leadership in a school even without seeing the leader.
Oh, yeah.
How does this apply to instructional leadership? When you visit a school, which I know you do a lot, how can you tell that it has a strong instructional leader?
Because when you walk into a classroom, now, I want to be very clear that a teacher can be phenomenal without the coaching of an administrator or instructional coach. I was a teacher, I've never coached in my entire career, so I don't even know what that is. And yet I still did it at a high level. They tell me teacher of the year at the building level, the district level, the county level, and New Jersey State finalists. But everybody's not going to do it at that level. So therefore, as instructional leader, I want to make sure that that teacher that needs me most has me. So there's an expression I use. I'm not here to get you. I'm here to grow you. But it's us working collaboratively. So therefore, I walk the school and the halls in terms of what you would expect it to be. When I see halls where students are moving quickly to class or they're empty during class, that's leadership. When I'm greeted at the front entrance, that's leadership in terms of the way I'm greeted. So everything about that school is leadership. So now when we go to that classroom and I'm observing instruction, chances are when I'm in a school, I had opportunity to take a glance at a pacing guide, that corresponds with curriculum. So particularly if my visit is around instruction as opposed to a broader sense of leadership. So if I'm there really focused, honed in on instruction, I may be looking at that pacing guide. So now as I'm walking into classrooms, say in an elementary school, and I'm looking at instruction in class 101, but I'm looking for the autonomy of a teacher, but I'm also looking for the uniformity relative to curriculum. So am I going into a classroom, two classrooms, and between the two, there are two different worlds here. Like you're teaching something over here, and then over here, you're in a whole altogether different space. Well, that speaks to the leadership. Because see, ideally, if I'm in classroom 101 and there's a 102, 103, 104 who are teaching the same content area, I should be able to get the same thing as student regardless of where I am. Just like, you know, we say ideally with state standards, if I'm in a particular school district and I transfer to a different district, that shouldn't be a new world for me as far as curriculum if we're teaching to standards. Standards are standards. So therefore, if however I'm being prepared in one school, I should be being prepared comparably in another school. So with the classroom, going back to the question, I'm just looking to see that, wow, there is some level of uniformity here. And it speaks volumes to the leadership of the building. I mean, it also speaks volumes to the PLC within the building without the leadership. It also speaks volumes to department meetings between teachers without leadership present. But that icing on the cake is that leadership, particularly when those four teachers are reporting to that one administrator. And now you see the leadership between the four without having to see the leader present in any of those classrooms.
What's your greatest concern for school leaders today? As we've mentioned, you're in schools a lot. You're talking with a lot of leaders. What are the biggest challenges or barriers they're facing right now?
This is the concern. The volume of folks who mean well, but just find it very difficult, very challenging to be what that book lays out. What is my value instructionally to the teachers I supervise? But another challenge, this is in the context of the times we're in right now politically, without me getting political. There's this word equity. Everything about me as a teacher, as a principal, and I would dare say as a parent, is equity. I don't treat my three biological children the same. I treat them differently based on who they are, where they are, and as they are. So, in the classroom, going back to 1988, when I started, I was equitable without having the word equity as a part of my vocabulary, part of my lexicon. It didn't become a part of my lexicon until it became a thing in education around 2012-ish. So here, all of a sudden, everyone was talking equity, and equity was simply the latest extension of closing the achievement gap. So now we're in this climate where everybody's shaking in their boots. Like, I can't talk about equity. I can't be equitable, right? Well, then therefore, the challenge that you asked me about to a principal, particularly that challenge, that principal who has embraced equity, now can't even have the staff meeting to discuss it for fear of repercussions. So that's a real challenge, because if young, I keep making reference to young me and letting him represent all the children in America. If young Principal Cafele is in a non-equitable learning environment, I can tell you right now definitively that young Principal Cafele is going to be one of your bottom tier students. He's going to be a failure. How do I know that? Because young Principal Cafele was an absolute failure in high school, 5 years of nothing but Fs, right? But had I been in a space, they said, we need to meet that youngster right where he is. This young man that went on to graduate from college summa cum laude, right? That same failure. How do you go from failure to summa cum laude? You know, there's no switch to turn on. It was already in. But there was no mechanism, people, to bring it out in an equitable fashion. That's a big challenge for leaders, particularly those leaders who call themselves equitable. How do I now ensure that my school is equitable when I could find myself on the unemployment line?
I'm curious about the reaction you've gotten to the book so far. I know you're an author who really maintains close connections to your readers and your audience.
Yeah.
Does the feedback you've gotten so far make you optimistic about the future of instructional leadership?
It does. Here you got this book, I think it's 174 pages, an easy read, a quick read, but a great reference, and versus a lot of what's out there that's more textbook oriented. And I'm getting all these emails from people or inboxes or just right on the thread on social media of people saying, thank you for writing this book. I needed this, right? This is helping me immensely to start the process of being the instructional leader that I need to be. Folks calling me saying, we're doing an entire book study with the district administrative team or with the school administrative team. The book came out in December, so to get that kind of feedback so soon is really good for my soul, that people are actually reading it and feeling it's worth its value, that we want to go beyond just individuals reading a book, but we want to implement what we've learned from the book.
It is a quick and engaging read, and it's not surprising it's having an impact, given the message and substance. Rudy Cafele, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today. Lots of inspiring and helpful ideas, as always.
Appreciate it.
And thanks to our listeners for joining us. To learn more about Principal Cafele's new book, What is My Value Instructionally to the Teachers I Supervise, go to www.asced.org/books.